This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
AIG has a plan to pay taxpayers back in full.
What a difference a couple of years make.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It is Thursday, December 9th. Coming up, the tobacco industry adjusts to falling cigarette sales. Plus, which country is doing the best job at economic recovery?
But first, there's a new plan to get the bailed-out insurance giant AIG out from underneath the government's wing. AIG was the company that got the biggest rescue from Washington during the financial crisis, about $180 billion. Marketplace's David Gura is with us from Washington with more on this. David, bring us up to date on this plan from AIG.
Well, discussions between AIG and the U.S. government are still going on, but the company disclosed in a regulatory filing yesterday that it's close to a deal to pay back $20 billion worth of bailout money to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. AIG says it's able to do that because it made $27 billion selling off some of its subsidiaries. Now, you'll remember AIG got this credit line from the New York Fed back in 2008 when the U.S. government gave the company that big bailout.
Right. And I mean, it just seems unbelievable to be talking about AIG able to pay back this loan. Is the unthinkable possible here, David? Could AIG actually repay all of its bailout money?
Well, you know, there have been some signs that the government's doing pretty well with these bailouts. It sold off its Citigroup common stock earlier this week for a profit. I talked to Clark Troy, an analyst at the Aite Group. He says AIG is making strides even though it's in a tough spot.
If you consider the fact that, you know, AIG is selling insurance from a very low credit rating, its operating results have nonetheless been good, that, you know, speaks to the fact that it still does a good job of selling insurance and selling investment products.
You know, a lot of folks suspect we could see another Treasury stock sale of AIG this time in the spring. And as you said, Jeremy, Treasury says it might make a profit on AIG.
What a difference a couple of years make. Marketplace's David Gura in Washington. Thanks, David.
Thanks, Jeremy.
There is no safe amount of cigarette smoke. That'll be in the findings of a report coming this morning from the U.S. Surgeon General's office. Now, in the last 5 years, cigarette sales have fallen 17%. And that has the tobacco industry turning its attention to smokeless tobacco products. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports.
These days, smokeless tobacco is more than the stuff you chew. It also comes in small teabag-like packets. Gilbert Ross is medical director of the American Council on Science and Health.
Then we also have Orbs, tobacco lozenges, basically, that dissolve in your mouth.
Orbs are sold under the Camel label. Tobacco giants are investing heavily in smokeless products. They're hoping that smokers who quit cigarettes will pick up tobacco of another sort under the same brand. Morningstar analyst Phil Gorham says sales of these products are growing around 7% a year.
People who are quitting are migrating into this category. But it's a pipe dream to think that smokeless tobacco will eventually become the key revenue driver.
Gorham says that key revenue driver will continue to be cigarettes, and smokeless products may face tougher regulations. The Food and Drug Administration is looking at products like Orbs. They look like candy and could lure kids to take up tobacco, smokeless or otherwise. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Oil prices have been rising again lately. They recently peaked around $90 a barrel, and market watchers are predicting oil will be pushing as high as $100 a barrel next year. So, is that the new normal? Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports.
The world's appetite for oil is growing again. Demand is strong in Asia, and as the U.S. economy recovers, demand is also picking up here. Some predict oil prices will climb to $100 a barrel by spring, but few expect those prices will stick. For one thing, there's a healthy supply of oil available. And industry analyst Jim Ritterbusch says OPEC has the capacity to crank up the volume even further.
OPEC doesn't want prices above $100 per barrel.
If oil stayed above $100 a barrel, businesses might consider investing in alternative energy. Sarah Emerson is president of the research firm Energy Security Analysis.
What it does is it sort of rejuvenates the discussion on green energy and on green vehicles. And sort of says, okay, well, maybe this is commercially viable.
In that respect, high oil prices could be good for the environment. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Cotton prices are at historic highs right now. If you're buying expensive clothing, you probably wouldn't notice. You're not really paying for the cotton, you're paying for the brand. But when you get right down to the bare bones cotton products, you do notice a difference. And Steve, that was the case at the state prisons in Illinois.
Okay.
The provider of prison underwear refused to deliver the latest batch of boxers because it's no longer profitable because the cotton prices are so high. Yeah. So the cash-strapped state decided even a brief underwear interruption would be intolerable. So it'll go to an emergency provider and will pay an additional $50,000 for the support.
Oh, my. You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, the 9th day of December. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. We're going to get a take now on the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects us here in the United States.
Today we get a couple of economic indicators from major world powers trying to climb out of the global recession. Britain's central bank says it's going to leave interest rates alone for now. Analysts say bankers are waiting to see the effects of budget cuts that go into effect next year. The British government today is expected to vote on a controversial tuition hike for higher education. Thousands of students are in London protesting that. Of course, questions about the costs of college resonate here at home as well. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us to talk about all this. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
What's the British government proposing?
Well, the government wants to make a very deep cut in the amount of cash that it puts into higher education. So it wants students to pay as much as three times more for tuition than they do at present. Under this plan, students could wind up paying up to $14,000 a year to go to university. They'd pay it after graduating and only if they can afford it.
$14,000 a year. That would be considered a pretty good deal here in the United States.
Right, but you have to bear in mind that it wasn't that long ago in Britain that tuition was free for students. Taxpayers picked up the entire tab. It's the tripling of the burden on many students that's causing the furore. And Aaron Porter, a student leader, claims that it will effectively price many young people out of a university education.
The proposals here from this government will see English universities become the most expensive public universities in the world. I'm not saying that graduates shouldn't pay anything, but I am saying it's completely outrageous to ask them to pay the most expensive prices in the world.
Now, as you say, many Americans would dispute that, but a key difference between the UK and the US is that Britain doesn't have anything like the array of grants and scholarships that have been built up in the US.
Now, the vote is today. How are people reacting, Stephen?
Well, most worrying for the government have been the big splits in its own ranks. Some members of the government say they're going to oppose this measure. It looks as if it will squeak through, but without any doubt, this will be the government's toughest test, its roughest day in its campaign to cut the budget deficit.
Stephen, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard reporting from London.
Well, in addition to the news from London, we also got word from Tokyo that the Japanese economy grew at a better than expected 4.5% last quarter. Let's put all this in perspective now with Simon Johnson. He's the former chief economist at the IMF and author of the new book, 13 Bankers. He joins us now. Welcome to Marketplace.
Nice with you.
Well, we see a lot of different countries doing different things right now. Some are cutting their budgets, some are cutting interest rates, some are cutting taxes. Is there any sense so far of what's working and what's not?
Yes, if you can manage to somewhat quietly depreciate your exchange rate, make it worth less, help your exporters and help those firms that compete against imports, you definitely have an edge. The UK's had about a 20% depreciation in the pound from its peak, and that's really helping their economy rebound. The Eurozone and the US dollar, of course, have been much more mixed.
Everybody wants the cheapest currency so they can get the most exports and export their way out of the crisis. Well, let me ask you about the thing that a lot of countries, especially in Europe, are doing, which is slashing their budgets to get their deficits under control. Just today, the Brits are voting on raising university tuition. Are they making the right move by cutting budgets right now in the middle of this downturn?
Well, it's a tough call, and they're under a lot of market pressure. All of these European countries are being stress tested by the markets. The markets want to know how tight a fiscal policy they can run when bond markets move against them. I think some of the European countries will pass that test, and some of them will probably fail. Out of that will come a stronger, more resilient core to the current Eurozone, with a different composition, perhaps, and definitely a different structure. But that'll take a while.
And while we've got you, Simon Johnson, let me just get your take on what the U.S. is doing. They are about to extend the Bush tax cuts and add in even more tax cuts. Do you think that that is the right move for us?
No, I think it's a very bad idea. We don't have a lot of fiscal space. We should be using it to stimulate the economy in a more effective way. The structure of these tax cuts is just lining us up for exactly the same kind of stress test from financial markets. When they're done with Europe and some European countries have passed and can be regarded as an alternative safe haven, those financial markets will turn against the United States. And the fact we've thrown caution to the winds in terms of our deficits and the increase in debt you get from these tax cuts, that will be held against us by those very same markets.
All right, Simon Johnson, former chief economist at the IMF. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Well, Jeremy, the world is getting more corrupt. Can you believe it? It's according to a new survey from the group Transparency International. In fact, listen to this. The report claims a quarter of people around the world, a quarter, 25%, have paid a bribe in the last year.
Wow.
And one of the worst places is India. Let's go to New Delhi and the BBC's Divya Arya, who has this story.
When you think of corruption, places like Iraq and Afghanistan usually come to mind. But this survey says some surprisingly advanced countries are also near the top. Three quarters of Indians asked say the country has become more corrupt in the past 3 years, and more than half have paid a bribe, way above the worldwide average. Mr. A.N. Tiwari leads an anti-corruption body within the government. He says the problem is now out of control.
No sector of the government is now free from corruption. I don't believe the traditional instruments available to the government can combat this corruption.
The government itself has recently become involved in a huge scandal over cell phone licenses and allegations of fraud. Clearly, there's still a lot to clean up in a country that prides itself on being the world's biggest democracy. In New Delhi, I'm the BBC's Divya Arya for Marketplace.
A couple of interesting earning reports this morning, Steve, from opposite sides of the relaxation spectrum. First, aerobic retailer Lululemon nearly doubled its profit in the third quarter. They're attributing that to strong sales of their famous yoga wear.
Oh,
and
yes,
I know that
of course.
Producer even likes that yoga wear from Lululemon. Also, the maker of Jack Daniel's Tennessee Whiskey saw a 5% boost in its quarterly profits. It seems heavy whiskey sales in Mexico and the UK offset weaker drinks in Russia and here in the US.
And you know, Jeremy, you can say just one term about this whole thing.
Yeah.
To your health.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, December the 9th. I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers section at our website, marketplace.org. 17 years ago, way back in 1993, then Vice President Al Gore, presiding over the U.S. Senate, broke a tie and voted to keep ethanol tax credits alive. Today, Gore calls that vote a mistake, and so do a lot of other folks who say it's subsidizing corn farmers. As Marketplace's Sarah Gardner reports from the Sustainability Desk, there's a movement now to end ethanol subsidies.
This may be the only issue that many liberals and Tea Party activists agree on. Both MoveOn.org and FreedomWorks have signed a letter urging Congress to let the 45-cent per gallon ethanol subsidy expire at the end of the month. A bipartisan group of 17 U.S. senators wrote a similar missive. So what's with the sudden left-right love fest?
It's because of the uniquely bad nature of ethanol policy these days.
Nathaniel Green is with the Natural Resources Defense Council. He says the government should not be backing the corn-based fuel.
It has more global warming pollution than gasoline, and it's costing taxpayers about $5.5 billion this year and about $6 billion next year. So both fiscal conservatives and environmentalists are feeling like it's time to stop wasting our money.
But Jeff Broin begs to differ. He's CEO of POET, the largest ethanol producer in the world.
The ethanol tax credit has a tremendous return to the United States government. Just in tax revenues alone from the industry, it offsets itself by about 2-to-1.
Broin also says cutting ethanol support will hurt investor confidence in the next generation of biofuels, like switchgrass. Although ethanol's under fire right now, it still has some support in Congress, especially from Farm Belt lawmakers. The Center for Public Integrity reports that ethanol-related groups gave almost $1 million to nearly 200 candidates in the past two election cycles. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Well, things are about to get more expensive for people with chronic medical conditions. One major health insurer has alerted its customers that prices on prescription drugs are going up. For more on this, let's bring in LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus. David, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, so you're experiencing this problem in a very personal way.
Well, I am, in the sense that United Healthcare, which is my employer-provided insurer, has just raised the cost of one of the most widely prescribed insulins out there. It's called Novolog, and as it happens, I'm a type 1 diabetic. I'm going to see my copay rise 250% as a result of this, raising my annual insulin cost to over $800.
Over $800. So it's a really big impact on your wallet.
And this isn't just about me, and it's just not about insulin. This is about anyone who takes a prescription drug to manage some sort of condition and is essentially a captive of the insurance industry when they dictate terms. Because in some cases, as with insulin, there is no generic equivalent. You can't switch to something else that'll be cheaper but still have the same desired effect. So when insurer says, it's going to be this way or you're going to pay a lot more out of pocket, well, I and anyone else who has a chronic condition is suddenly backed against a wall, not to put too fine a point on it, and held hostage by such a decision.
Why is this happening right now, David?
Well, it's happening because there's a lot of pressure to rein in medical costs, and that pressure is warranted. Medical costs are soaring. It's one of the reasons our insurance premiums are going up, and it's one of the reasons our healthcare system is so out of whack. So no one really begrudges an insurer wanting to try to keep these costs down. But in the case of certain medicines, where there is no generic equivalent, it's just simply a matter of fairness and access to the treatment that's going to allow you to manage your condition. If there was a cheaper alternative, great, I would use it, but there isn't. And in fact, endocrinologists say that the switch that United Healthcare would like me to make could, in fact, affect my condition overall and perhaps exacerbate the situation.
Yeah, as if a chronic medical condition isn't tough enough. David Lazarus, consumer columnist for the LA Times, thanks again for joining us.
A pleasure.
And finally, Jeremy, as we learned today on this program about falling weekly jobless claims, the American job market seems to be making a comeback. Share prices at headhunter firms such as Manpower and Kelly Services are at near year-long highs, meaning investors are confident in the prospects of putting people to work. And workers seem to be more confident as well. More people are leaving their current jobs with the belief that other work is available. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics says there's been a near 20% rise over the last year in the number of employees quitting and saying, take this job and you finish it, Jeremy.
Shove it.
Shove
take
it.
This job and shove it.
In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And in New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.